This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, I call this meeting to order at 4:33. Is there, if, I don't know if all of you guys have the minutes, but is there a motion to approve the minutes from October 4th with the new changes?
Oh.
Or with the changes from, not new changes, the changes that we agreed on.
Do we have to reapprove?
Oh, wait.
The minutes from October 25th indicate
no, those
were
approved, yeah, you're
right. October 4th were already approved.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That was what was confusing me as well.
I did not reread the October 4th minutes.
You email that, you send me the changes, then I put it up on the website.
There you go.
Done. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from October
20th?
Oh, yeah, corrections.
Yeah, on page, they're not numbered. On the last portion of section Roman numeral 3, up near the top, says President Gordon left. A. Calland acknowledged he had a lot of changes in mind regarding to the campus climate. I don't recall saying that exactly. What I did say was that President Gordon had, what I wanted to say was, had done a lot to improve the campus climate. So would that be changed to A. Calland stated that President Gordon had done a lot to improve the campus climate? Do they get the wording? Is that okay? Probably not exactly.
And I also,
sir,
I have another change. Oh. That one's for something that one. On page 2, paragraph C, third bullet, starts off. Additionally, Jay Blair said he felt they were off to a slow start, and the UA needed more resolutions and issues being discussed. The last part of that sentence was deleted. I suspect that there's more things to be discussed out there. We haven't seen them, but I would ask that sentence just end at, additionally, Jay Blair said he felt they were off to a slow start, period. Picking up again, Ataya agreed with the fact that they were, and it says of, it should be off.
I actually don't know where we are.
The second page?
Second page, paragraph C, third bullet. Starts with
under
the word additionally, Jay Blair.
Oh, third bullet under campus infrastructure.
So, and the first sentence after the word slow start, the third sentence, change of to off.
Roman numerals thrown. There's a 4 after the 5 before the 6.
You know, that's the way it is.
I got it. I have some corrections too, as you might imagine.
Oh.
I'm happy to submit these in writing because I didn't track changes. But a couple of things that are pretty important, I think. Under new business, 5A, discussion with Gordon, bullet point 2, he said the new building for the humanities. In section 3, says he also said Board of Trustees gave approval to increase philanthropic funds for the Cornell NYC Tech campus. That's not correct. The Board of Trustees approved raising the overall philanthropic goal for all of Cornell. It's got nothing to do with the Tech campus. So I just deleted that and substitute target, increase philanthropic funds target. The next bullet point should be the Cornell Council for the Arts, not the Cornell Center for the Arts. I also believe the next sentence should be R. Wayne wanted to know how the administration would handle issues in the future, not these departments.
I wonder if that's what I wanted to know. How he would ensure that the people who are most affected by the decisions being made by the administration get an input on the decision while there's still time to influence.
Continuing on, page 3, first full bullet point. R. Wayne agreed with the president but noted that there is a culture of fear at Cornell. The next sentence is President Gordon agreed I don't remember 100%, but my guess is that President Scorton did not agree that there was a culture of fear at Cornell. I probably would just strike agreed and President Scorton said he asked students and faculty, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. He wouldn't agree that there was a...
The next paragraph...
There could be, but not yet.
The paragraph after that, which is the one where I was talking, I've basically rewritten. I'm happy to send that to you. One question I had, and we might want to... We might want to double check this, but I'm not sure. He said that the timeline for taking on new debt could be 3 years. I don't know if that information is public. We might not want to have that in the minutes. That might be something we should check, maybe. For that matter, it might not be a bad idea to send the minutes with corrections to the president's office to make sure that we're not inadvertently disclosing any confidential
information. That's a good idea. Mm-hmm.
So what's the proper form, Evan? Do you table the minutes? And do as you proposed, accept your edits, and then recirculate them?
I think we can approve the minutes as they, with the corrections. Unless you think it's... Okay.
I want to see the rewrite.
No, that's fine. I'd be happy to read them out, but that might take... So that's all I have.
So I would move to table the minutes until they get redacted and go to President Scorton and come back.
Since the minutes are a digestion anyhow, I'd rather not send them to President Scorton first for approval. I think that's a little odd. It would be. But
it's not approval, it's just...
So just to make sure we're not disclosing anything that she didn't.
I'd be happy among us to say that lie to come out.
I don't know if it's confidential or not. If it isn't confidential, I'd love to have that out there. I think that's good to know. It's good information to have. I'm just not sure in what context he made these remarks.
We were not sending the minutes to President Scorton for approval. We were sending them for comment. I think that's only fair.
To make sure he's quoted properly, because he's the subjective speaker.
Yeah, and these go on our website, and they're public for the entire world to see. There exists the chance, though I would hope that people wouldn't do it because they're not intended to be a transcription, but there exists the chance that someone could comment or quote from them. You know, Daily Sun, President Scorton agreed that there is a culture of fear.
Does that sound reasonable, Andy?
The alternative.
In the very, very limited sense. I won't fight it, but I prefer to have us make the decision if we think it's
to amend the minutes or not.
Well, I think what happened.
To amend the minutes or not based on his comments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's what.
Yeah, right.
That's what we're saying.
Yeah. Session for comments.
With that, understand.
You may say
I said session for comments. We don't think you said that, so we just don't take it. Not losing power of him to order them. I just want to comment.
Because, I mean, under the parliamentary whatever, the president's office doesn't have standing to offer amendments to the minutes anyway. Only the members of the UA do.
So I second the request to the table mm-hmm. minutes run by the president's office for comment before we finalize them.
Okay. All those in favor? All opposed? Motion passes.
Evan did mention the numbering is.
Oh, the numbering is off, yeah.
I'm happy to take the lead on doing some track changes and sending them to you based on both my own things and what other people have said.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is the call for late additions to the agenda.
Since it's such a committee, that meeting was before this, we came to order here in the same room, in fact. And so we have two new resolutions that to be discussed by the members.
one of those.
The other one is just we changed the resolution that is on the agenda currently under new business. We changed it, and so it's actually less of a support of the essay resolution and more of a new resolution that indirectly supports the essay resolution. Does that make sense?
So the text that maybe it's more appropriate to use, but the text we have reflective of where
it's reflective of the idea of it, but I will put it up on the screen actually when we get to it.
The one you got by email, like,
but I didn't email
it. But the gender neutral bathrooms is the one that I got from Amy yesterday.
I didn't email it.
There were two that came out within the past hour. You may not have.
Can I answer an information question here?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with the rules. Is there any, is there any limit to when motions can come in? That I think in the Senate we used to hear a motion and then we had a one meeting to think about it.
Yeah, we aren't voting on it today. We're just discussing.
So these are not going
to
be
No, they're just discussed to present the ideas.
To answer your question directly, I don't think there actually is a provision in our bylaws mandating that. But I mean,
we do have a provision that says we can't vote on a resolution the day that it comes before us.
I think that only applies to charter and bylaw then.
Well, I'm not going to argue with Evan on it, but generally that would not be our intent.
Right.
That said, I'm very happy that we're not.
And it's more realistic to do it this way. You know, ideally, we would get these things to you 2-3 days in advance. But there seems to be a flurry of, the meeting's in 15 minutes. Well, then here it is.
I understand.
So,
for point of comparison, if it helps, the GPSA sends out its agenda resolution supporting materials on Friday, and then we meet on Monday. So everybody has, typically Friday morning, so everybody has 1, 2, 3.5 days to read everything. And we routinely approve resolutions to the same meeting that they're first offered.
Okay.
Thank you
for that. So then we'll move on to committee updates. Pose and judicial. Yeah.
Very quick late addition.
Okay.
I talked about the Tech Campus proposal and I said that I would email the provost. I'm happy to tell you the results of that.
Okay. Any other late additions?
I'll speak for 30 seconds about the campus planning committee.
Okay. Okay, and then we'll move on to committee updates, Code and Judicial Committee.
All right, so we met two weeks ago for our first meeting, and we're meeting again tomorrow. We have one major issue on the table right now, is the Title IX, Dear Colleague's Letter. We have three options on the table at the moment. I don't think it's appropriate just to close them out, but we have a much longer going to get to. And then, but once we do, we're hoping to wrap that up tomorrow. We'll see. We scheduled a 2-hour meeting tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I fully expect it to take that long because there's just a lot of different sides of the issue. We have a lot of different speakers coming in. And as soon as that issue settles itself, I will let you guys know. That's it for the moment.
And you're telling us that the Code and Judicial Committee is probably going to make a recommendation to us, one of these three, perhaps something else, but it will be coming through to us perhaps at the next meeting.
Yes. Hopefully. There's a lot of different opinions. If we could get everyone to vote, we have two basic issues to vote on. One, to pursue a change, because there's part of me that doesn't want to pursue anything. And then, if we do decide to pursue, then what do we pursue? What amendment do we go for?
Yeah, and for those who aren't familiar, it's pretty complex and far-reaching. I mean, some people say the whole code needs to be rewritten. Others think that it could be modified, and others, again, don't want to touch it. So I guess we'll learn more after tomorrow.
Exactly.
And you don't have other key issues?
We do have other key issues, but, like, we haven't even gotten to them. On the last meeting, we had a list of different issues to talk about. The Dear Colleague Letter was the first issue. We didn't even get to the other three issues, just because everyone has an opinion, and, you know, it's just a contentious issue right now. But so tomorrow is hopefully going to be completely dedicated to that, and hopefully we can solidify it from there. That's it for tomorrow.
All right, moving on to Campus Welfare Committee.
So the meeting that we had, I think, last week went relatively well. We had an update in terms of child care. We talked about prospects, playing around with the idea of, a graduate class council, as well as, in the end, brainstorming ways on how we can, outreach students. Because I just got the minutes earlier. Just a couple cool things about child care that they improved a lot since the last time we met with them. I remember you asked me about turnover. So from what I last remember, it decreased from 48% to like something like 6%. They've also, in terms of and when they did exit polls, they found out that let me just look at this stuff just so I don't mess up. Oh, there we go. So excellency rating of the children's experience at the center rose from 8% when we last checked up on them to 56%. Excellency rating of adult experience at the center rose from 8% to 22%. We're still trying to work out as to why the adults did not have a good experience. And they also asked as to why students were, some students still left. And part of the reason was financials. It was mostly financials. I can forward the minutes as well.
Excellency compared to, I think before we got more things like better than average or something.
It would be interesting to see the results, but do you know, or was it stated when that poll that said 8% was taken? Because I don't remember it ever being that low the last time we...
No.
But I mean, the last time we got the numbers, there was.
I can look into that for you. I don't think it has worth the data in the minutes. I can send it for you.
The figure that I remember.
There was a substitute speaker at that meeting, and not Linda Kroll.
The figure that I remember was something like 51% in the top two boxes. You know, strongly approve, or something like that. But I don't remember. Even if we were given it, I don't remember what the top box figure was.
Well, these were children's experiences. I'm not, they separated children's experiences when they asked the children to, critique them, and then they also had the adult experience.
So they're both surveys being conducted at 3-year-olds? I'm not sure I understand.
3-year-olds. Oh, I guess.
It's a daycare center. It's not teens.
when we talked about this last spring, or last year, it was we only ever talked about a survey of parents.
Survey of parents. In terms of the survey of parents, they had excellent ratings of adult experience at center rose from 8% to 22%. And I think she did, from what I remember, she did address that, you know, these are simply referring to the excellent portions of it. There's like, it's kind of a gradient. So she only stressed.
That's what I meant. I thought we were going from unsatisfactory to, you know, doing something like this versus, you know, it seems to be trending up.
that's that. And then in terms of the graduate, playing around with the graduate class council idea, I was hoping to speak with Evan later on, possibly after this meeting, in terms of what kind of direction or what kind of purpose do you want to serve. And then also in terms of outreach, someone brought up an amazing idea that I'm surprised that we haven't thought of before, and it was just simply having a letter or having something posted in a newspaper saying that, the university assembly has rearranged its structure so that there's three main committees. These are the chairs of this. You can contact us through this. Just to get our name out because, we're all new. And then, truthfully, many of the committee members said they'd never even heard of the university assembly, let alone this committee, until they got invited. So, in that respect, I was hoping that we could talk about that. I kind of want to advertise us more, market us more. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but...
I did some work on that. Professor Nicholas, who's one of the members of that committee, asked how come there hasn't been a Chronicle article or something like that featuring what's changed in the university assembly starting this year. And I followed up with the Chronicle, and they would be interested to do a story. I think if we have some substance about, picture of specific issues that are going to be coming up, which it looks like we're getting towards with Title IX and child care center and the retiree targeting it, that we may be able to put together a story that can run in the Chronicle.
Could it also run in the Sun?
I'm sorry?
Could it also run in the Sun?
Well, the Sun isn't part of Cornell, so
it's up
to them what they want to run. But the Chronicle is part of the university, so they're interested in promoting what's going on at the university.
Just to comment on that, I would be shocked if the Sun doesn't want to do something. I've talked to I get an email probably once every 2 weeks from someone at the Sun asking me about TJC. So I'm sure once that issue is done, I'm sure they're going to want something. So I'd be shocked if they don't want something.
I think the Sun is probably more, the Sun is bigger about catchy headlines. I think they're more interested in stories like UA revises campus code in response to dear colleague's letter than they are interested in stories like 6 months ago the university assembly revised its charter.
Another thing I think to think about is although the university assembly doesn't have a chief sort of publicity officer position, it might be worthwhile to think about who might be the point person for those kinds of outreach efforts, even if it's an informal role for now. So everybody knows who they can go to pitch ideas to the Sun or any other outlet.
And then this was just a thought that I had actually while I was just walking here. What if I was playing around with the idea of having office hours, so to speak, of let's say, what if our constituents can't make it to, I guess, either the committee meetings or to the actual UA meetings? So I was thinking maybe of just reserving a space, like that would happen weekly. We can either take turns or one of us could stick to that and, just people can stop by, voice their concerns, voice their opinions, because this is a time where we're defining ourselves, and I guess how proactive or how active the University Assembly will be in the future is somewhat, I feel contingent on how active or proactive we are right now. So
I agree with you about being proactive now. I disagree with holding office hours. when we were doing this whole charter process, Ed Strong and others booked rooms, advertised office hours, said, come talk to us about your concerns. Nobody showed up.
Exactly.
I already have office hours, Mondays 2 to 4, Lincoln 103. I have an email address and a phone number. If someone wants to meet with me and talk to me, I'm very happy to do that, and I think that's probably true for anybody in this room. If one of our constituents has a concern. But I don't think it's going to be productive for us to sit in an office for 2 hours a week. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I know class council does that as well, and it's never shown to be productive. No one usually comes.
Yeah, the student union board does it as well.
Yeah. I do it as well. Live, 11:30 to 1:30. Had one person.
My students come when they have an assignment.
So it sounds like you need to get the word out, and that office hours isn't the way to get the responses back. But I think that the premise is a good one. People don't know we're here, and if they are thinking about it, they don't know who to inquire to, because there's that barrier of, am I talking to the right person? Who is this? For all I know, it's somebody very important to the university, you know, or something. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of reasons why they wouldn't write. And that gets back to, you know, dealing with what Ari was talking about. How do we get the word out about who we are, what's the appropriate way to contact us, you know, with issues, and making it a little more perhaps easy to find and structured to use. You know, is there an online inquiry form, you know, they can go to some inbox and, you know, or something, so that they don't have to call Ed when they don't know who Ed is. You know, or there are probably ways to do it. We can.
Well, a small change that, not to sound like a broken record, but that I think is maybe an easy one, Ari, is on the members page, we could list which constituencies we represent. Right now, we're all simply listed as members. So if somebody wants to email somebody, they might email the chair. But if they had, say, a graduate student issue or an employee issue or whatever, they don't know which one of us is which. That might also help with, again, not to sound like a broken record, the nameplate question, maybe having nameplates, not group one, because we all know each other, but nameplate. Yeah, all I disagree with is office hours. I agree 100% that we need to get out there.
You also need to update your metaphors. Game and music business, scratch records. Scratch CD.
Well, the CD don't. No, a broken
93. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
No.
For the record, of course, we're not alone in this. The GPSA has exactly the same problem, exactly the same issues. We do have a communications officer. You know, we're constantly trying to say, look, graduate and professional students, got an issue, we're here. It's an uphill battle.
Well, if people don't come until they have an issue. Mm-hmm. And they don't seek it out until they're really behind something or really upset about something, many of them. But we'll look into the UA exec will. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll look into some options, see what we think, we just gonna have to talk to some things. I'm sure Tommy Bruce would be more than glad to advise us on how we might do this more effectively.
I second Ari's point about maybe someone on the executive could consider being the service. PR person.
I mean, technically part of my role is to be a spokesperson for the university assembly, so I think that would fall under me, but we can discuss it.
Well,
who does it is less important than it's
embedded.
How do we figure out, how would somebody outside this body figure out you're the person to be male, and what are the appropriate types of things to send to this versus, say, the employee assembly versus the students, you know. There's kind of a whole ball of wax here to help people get inputs into us. But why don't we let the UA exec look at it, and we'll come back to the members with perhaps some ideas and move forward.
Okay. And then the last thing, just as an add-on to this question I had was, are the committees allowed to advertise, or market, or is this, or should we approach it on a more, I guess, generalized view of just as the UA, and then we move?
There's nothing that would prevent a committee itself from marketing. In some cases, that would be very appropriate. You know, just make sure that you caveat when an occasional caveat is needed that you're making recommendations to, you know, certain bodies, you know, you don't have fiat necessarily to change the campus code yourself, you know, kind of things. Or, but yeah, you want people to come to their public meetings too. And if they got transportation issues, they've got whatever, they should go to the right committee when appropriate.
I was going to say one important piece of this, I'm hoping over time, is that each committee has a public information list that people can opt into that was intended to be a way for a broader community to know what's going on with that committee. But that mechanism is only going to work well if people have advance notice of when meetings are happening. So I may sound like a broken record, but a Windows application that's been running too long. That's right.
We're going to have to
I'll just keep saying it. Please get your meeting agendas, date and time out, even if they're in rough form, so we can advance on that list, and that would be a good piece of getting the word out.
The Bright Horizons story, whatever that different story is, may be a good thing for the Sun to pick up on, since it's been a couple of years.
And I was going to come back to that part of your report. Are there things that they were, I mean, so they were very positive about?
Largely positive. I think there are like two things that they got noted on, I think, in terms of the reading.
I think we certainly, like, there was a lot of detail in the meeting. I don't remember all the details.
I'm not worried about
the sort of it was that they're in a much better place than they were last year.
And the parents seem to agree with them. The faculty, I don't know that we know the faculty, but I mean, were there any counter opinions in the made available or brought up? In other words, they're saying this is all looking much, much better, and we don't have another group out there going, what? I mean, because in the past, it was like you thought you were talking to two different people looking at the same thing. I think it's looking great. It's horrible.
Yeah.
So, all right, so you didn't see that?
I did not see that.
All right.
Well, some of them are important, so I can write that down.
I have another chapter question. Did the question of sliding scale tuition come up at all in the meeting?
Sliding scale tuition.
Poor people pay less than rich people?
Not that I know.
Put it in Occupy Wall Street term.
Right.
No, not that I know of.
This is an issue for, just to rehearse it, for graduate students are eligible for a grant that is run through the Dean of Students offices. The maximum grant is, I'm forgetting the exact numbers, about $1,700. Faculty and employees, because their grants come through HR, have a maximum grant of about $5,000. Again, not to sound like Occupy Wall Street, but in general, graduate students make less than faculty and employees, but of course pay the same tuition. To me, the ideal solution, and I know Brenda Marston has talked about this, would be that instead of offering variable size grants for childcare, that they would have tuition set on the basis of income, and that it would be fair regardless of whether you're faculty, staff, graduate, or undergraduate.
Yeah, I'll double check the minutes. Just off the top of my head, I don't remember.
And you're welcome to attend his next meeting.
Yes. You guys are all welcome to attend next meeting.
I just am going to keep mentioning this. I mean, I've mentioned this directly to the president himself in the presence of the people who would have the ability to make this happen. It's covering the microphone. It's not going to happen, but I just would like to keep the discussion going. The money isn't there.
It used to be that way when it was at Martha Vance, correct?
I don't know.
I believe so. My daughter went there. I was quite sure that we were asked some information about our income, and it was a sliding scale.
I mean, I feel very strongly that's the fairest way to do it.
I'm just looking at the, it looks like there's only one graduate student representative on that committee right now.
Can't just welcome. I can't remember.
I'm sure that folks from
the center
would be happy to speak to those questions if they were posed.
Sure. I'll talk to Chris.
That's all I had in terms of
Campus Infrastructure Committee. I know that the resolutions come later, but
yeah. So in terms of resolutions, David Lee came to our meeting as well. Mentioned kind of updated us on TCAT situation. Some of you may know Thursday, most rural routes didn't run. That was not an official union action. That was action on
Chuck, I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Sure.
Right next to you.
I'll speak up. Here we go. The David Lee came to talk to us. TCAT on Thursday didn't run its rural routes, many of its rural routes, because a lot of bus drivers called in sick, and that wasn't a union action. That wasn't an official strike. That was something that certain bus drivers chose to do. So that. And so there's still negotiations for their contract.
So what's the issue? They've got about 2 years of solvency. What's
that? That's a separate issue. Which,
okay.
Which I'm gonna talk to David about that. See.
So what was the informal protest about then?
That just has to do with bus drivers. Their contract ended September 11th, so they're renegotiating the contract they can't ask with the bus operators. So. That's the obviously cost comes.
Tell them to call the NBA.
We also, and then besides that, I think everything is caught up in resolution. So we'll talk about that.
So on that note, we'll move to new business. And the first item under new business is discussion of resolution, which is actually two, availability of accessible unisex restrooms and locker rooms on campus. We changed the resolution during the infrastructure committee, so yeah, I'm putting that up on the screen now.
So this is a revision to the resolution 21 we put out yesterday.
Yeah, and we felt that it was changed enough that we could no longer call it a support resolution, and so that's why we took Nate's name off of it as well. So. I'll try and make it a full screen for you guys. That makes it better.
And unit 6.
I think the main major change is using the word unisex. I think the whereas, the first two whereas, is the first in order. Certain other language changes.
I think you made a consistent wording of restroom, bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stupidly.
Is there any problem with the companion animals? Is that just a funny thing to put in there?
Well,
the first letter.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm assuming it has to do with people that have like a seeing eye dog or.
Has the male seeing eye dog or female seeing eye dog or gendered seeing eye dog or blind seeing eye dog?
This is a lot broader than a gender neutral. This is a space
right.
for a much larger audience.
That was
yeah.
part of the reason.
Species. That's why we switched the first two, whereas
rephrase it to make it clear, because actually the resolution you saw before was intended to be that broad, but the ordering of whereas is as well as the language of the referring to bathrooms made it confusing as to what the how broadly are these bathrooms supposed to be used. So I feel like this is a lot clearer and gets the idea across.
I think there are two issues here. One is single stall restrooms. and that companion animals are relevant to that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other issue, and there are of course already single stall restrooms on campus.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a lot of them, but I can think of one in MVR. You can lock the door and you have access to the entire restroom yourself, and that takes care of companion animals too. It doesn't matter
mm-hmm.
what it says on the door, male, female, whatever. The other question is how single stall restrooms are labeled. Should they be labeled unisex, or should there be a single stall male restroom and a single stall female restroom, or whatever?
Well, currently this resolution and the VA it therefore resolves clauses. Is calling for just a single stall restroom to solve that issue.
Saying that new buildings should have a single stall restroom.
Right. Yes. And simply, I know you've got the symbol, it's like the male and the female belong to the roof on top. I don't know. And apparently that's universal for it.
So would that be the symbol that's used?
I don't, but this doesn't speak to much symbol. I'm just, from my experience, that's kind of bad one. I'm thinking about it. Can you use that? Anyone, but
this is what Randy said, but it seems like the resolution is sort of going in two different directions. A single stall restroom that is only usable by one person at a time is ipso facto unisex, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't matter.
Because this came up in a student assembly meeting. Sometimes the label on the door implies that it's only for one gender, even though, yeah, functionally it should be unisex because only one person can use it at a time. But so it's just a labeling issue in that situation.
There is, like, you go to a restaurant, there may be two stalls, but there may be two of them and one for male, one for female.
I don't know why we're so much focusing on the labels a lot. Why don't you just label it restroom and that kind of solves both issues?
I think that's basically what I'm saying. Make it about single stall restrooms.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have the availability of single stall restrooms, and those restrooms should be labeled such that they're usable by both genders.
And then
lay out the reasons for why you want to have single stall restrooms, companion animals, transgender individuals, so on and so forth, all good reasons. But that sort of, I think, to me, it's a little, it's leading to this discussion.
We don't want to lose the fact that in addition to a single stall restroom, it needs to be gender.
Yeah. But, I mean, the expensive thing, that requires changes to architectural drawings and capital projects and renovations is single stall restrooms. Changing a sign on the door is pretty straightforward.
Right. So that's
an easy change.
What this one's mm-hmm. asking for is that there be single stall. Because there would not necessarily be single stall bathrooms put into the building unless that was then,
So this be it for the result, current single-stall restrooms on the Ithaca campus be converted to unisex restrooms.
Should be labeled is probably what it should say.
Yeah.
There's no conversion,
per se.
Yeah.
Jim has made an amendment. Is there a
second? Take that book and hit yourself in it.
I was just in a really terrible meeting last Saturday that was supposedly run by Robert's Rules. I'm still recovering.
Otherwise, it'd be an error of two unisex
things. Actually, that's clear for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually wondering, in terms of the diaper changing stations, what if, like, how you're, converting single-stall bathrooms on the campus, you convert to gender-neutral restrooms? So if you're switching the names, but, like, what if the room itself, like, for existing stalls, what if they don't have enough room to have one of those?
Say that again?
I think you may have changed that part because we were possible.
Oh, you're saying diaper. Okay.
The diaper changing be available.
Where possible
and most beneficial.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That was something we saw and changed.
Because we recognize that it's not 100% necessary in every building, and
I have to say that I wish we weren't talking about this issue, and that is, you know, we could divide it between the flushers and the non-flushers. We can divide it between those that walk in the bathroom with a bag in their leg and those that don't. There's all kinds of uncomfortable situations that happen in bathrooms. And when Cornell could be a relatively safe place where people could deal with exactly who they are in a safe environment, relatively safe environment, over issues that, frankly, I don't believe are that big. And in effect, almost everybody, to some extent, but are not that big. And be prepared to go into the rest of the world being a stronger self. Or we could say, no, this is how we want the whole world to change. We want to lead the bathroom change. We want to be Cornell's bathroom. Anyhow, that's how I see it.
So this is either social engineering in the beginning or toughen up. And that's right. Because once you leave these hollow grounds,
keep a stiff upper lip.
There's a very practical point, though. I often, in my old age, go on tours, and a lot of old people need a job. And so what happens is the men go in, no problem. The women are standing outside, okay? It's absolutely absurd. If you have unisex bathrooms, you don't have that problem. So this is one really good thing about this.
So I actually agree about making unisex bathrooms just the norm, where you don't need so many stalls for practical reasons, or to have a unisex bathroom one place and lots of stalls in another place for practical reasons. But the whole thing to me sounds a little bit more like social engineering on not such a strong note.
I think for me the heart of the issue here is what I was saying before, single stall restrooms. For whatever reason that may be, doesn't matter to me. There are great reasons to have single stall restrooms. So, I think there are great reasons why new construction should include them and why existing ones. I mean, it's just a matter of changing some signs. So, you know, maybe the way to make this happen in a way that, I mean, I agree with Randy's point that in some sense they sort of take it off topic. It's not about why you need a single stall restroom. It's about that you need a single stall restroom. That should be available to you.
I feel like it's something why.
Build the case why Cornell should retrofit. I mean, signage is
retrofitting. We're talking about signs.
Yeah, but somebody's going to make them. Somebody's going to post them. I mean, there are budgetary impacts. Somebody's got to figure out which ones need to be relabeled and which ones don't. Don't kid yourself. There's a cost here, and some of it's small. Some of it, who knows? I don't. You know, if you're trying to renovate a bathroom in your home, it's not cheap.
Maybe we could enlist Nate Trefferson, who has already counted approximately 20. He's already done the legwork, as it were.
Yeah. Well, you're right.
Literally the legwork. Yeah.
So where does that leave us, Randy? I mean, do you want to take a crack at totally rewriting it, or are you recommending we scrap this and not move it forward?
My recommendation would be to scrap it, but I think the intent, well, that's what we have to know, the intent. Is the intent really social engineering?
I don't think we need to know the intent. We're really voting on the motion itself, okay? Never mind the whereas and
whatever the intent is, doesn't really affect whether we want to have those things that, that go into the rezonal thing.
Well, my intent would be, it's smart to have single-user bathrooms, period. Single-user bathrooms open to anybody that wants to use them.
Mm-hmm.
And with a signage change. It makes sense to, when we build new buildings, have the right number of stalls and at least some single-user bathrooms so anybody can be comfortable in that. And I leave out all the locker rooms and shower facilities, especially Penn State. And that's a slightly meaningless proposal to say that, but I think that's what's important to me in this proposal.
So on the be it resolved, which one would you take out, Randy?
Okay, so the first be it therefore resolved, I think, is great. The second one, I think, is great.
But just looking at the third one, you know, this proposal, and correct me if I'm wrong, is asking to have gender-neutral locker rooms and gender-neutral showers. I have no opinion on it, but considering we're about to implement something with Title IX in the terms of, you know, sexual harassment and things like that, I mean, you're opening up the university to liabilities that you have no idea. Like,
I know that the University of Illinois, it's one of their recreational facilities, or something like that. It was much larger. It had a swimming pool. It had male and female locker rooms. And it had a family locker room. There was a lot of families with the facility as well. So I think there's definitely precedent for having locker rooms for families, for, you know.
I mean, North already has two large bathrooms for this kind of purpose.
What's the viability issue?
There's a new standard of proof for certain instances.
Okay. Sorry, I understand that Title IX, your colleagues, I mean, what does that have to do with shower rooms and showers and changing rooms with gyms? If the university were to make available single occupancy stalls, how does that make someone more vulnerable to sexual harassment, number one? And if it did, in what way is the university liable for that, if I understand your point?
I
misunderstand.
I want to formulate this in the correct way. We're dealing with a situation where we are changing, and I don't want to say making it easy, but it's making it the...
Lowering the burden of proof.
Yes, okay, lowering the burden of proof. Now we're making a situation where you're going to see a higher incidence of that, because now you're having, you know, locker rooms where, you know.
But there's already single-stall bathrooms that exist.
I'm more worried about the locker room.
So you're worried about a small private locker room that one or more persons may be using, and then there could be problems.
Exactly.
In other words, used inappropriately.
Criminally. That sounds ridiculous, but I mean, down in College Park in Pennsylvania, they wouldn't think this is stupid right now either.
That does seem to be a very excellent point to bring up. But also looking at a transgender student coming in and including them in trying to make them feel comfortable, We happen to have somebody in the building that worked in who's transgender, and basically because there's no single cell bathroom, everybody had to get an email saying, by the way, there will be an individual who will be using, and I kind of looked up to that person because now it's kind of like a big open thing, and it didn't really make me speak.
And I have no opinion, I'm just bringing it up for discussion.
What I mean is that your objection sounds more like to small rooms that lock. And I mean that, you know, people can be sexually harassed in offices, they can be sexually harassed in classrooms. You know, I don't think making a room that locks available is in any way conducive any more so than any rooms that already exist. Or maybe not.
I would disagree with that last part because locker rooms are a unique place where some people hang around not have anything to do with, and you get the point. At the same time, I don't think we should live in fear. If it's the right thing to do, some people can abuse anything that you put in front of them. And so the unintended consequences, there may be a few of those, and those people should be held accountable under the code. You know,
let me try an amendment then. I move that we amend this motion by striking, be it further resolved, that each new constructive athletic and recreation facilities for locker rooms included at least one of that intersex team. I want to strike that. Okay. I move that portion of
motion
be seconded. Okay. Let's just get this over with and see whether we want it or not. Okay.
Okay. I would just say that, like, this is often like, and my experience with something like this would be a family locker room, where if you have a facility which isn't just used by, it's used by families, you have a locker room where, you know, you take your kids and you go. This is like from my experience.
May I also have a procedural suggestion? I don't think we really have rules that cover this, but usually I think a new business is where you offer questions rather than getting into amending the legislation. And perhaps, you know, if this is a question about, you know, is it appropriate to call for a mandate for showers as well as bathrooms, and, you know, not a lot is going to be built in the next month, you could send this back to the Campus Infrastructure Committee to do some vetting of those questions and bring a revised resolution to the next meeting.
Well, and Randy's kind of given his position, but in general, is the general support to forward a resolution once appropriately drafted for single stall restrooms, perhaps lockers, maybe not. But it seems like there is. So with that general sense of support, then we need to hammer out a final resolution that the assembly, in other words, we're not going to kick it to the curb and move on.
I would disagree with Ari. I think ultimately we have to pass the resolution. So I think it's important for us to give guidance to the Campus Infrastructure Committee about the kind of resolution that we're willing to pass. I think that...
Isn't
that
in the post-University Assembly meeting press conference?
I think the amendment is in order and germane.
Okay, then going back on the discussion of that amendment, I think that the part of the purpose for a single stall restroom is to be able to have that privacy if needed, and I think that a single use unisex changing locker room type of facility would also serve that same exact purpose, and therefore I think that be further resolved statement is needed, because in future buildings I think that they need someplace to change. If they feel that they need to use a single stall restroom, then they probably feel like they need a change in a single stall facility as well.
If I can make a comment. Mm-hmm. Personally, when I think back to my undergraduate experience, I didn't really use that facility as much, and part of that was because I was bullied in middle and high school,
in locker rooms. And for me, I think that this would have been a really, you know, pretty facility to have. And I might have used the facility where I went to undergraduate more often if they had something like this. So I'm actually quite, kind of one more thing about this, I think it's a really good thing to keep in this resolution. I trust the architects who will design these facilities to think about some of the issues we're talking about today and to make sure that there's not too, that there's not too much of any safety risk or danger.
And it's not saying a separate locker room, it's saying a unisex changing and shower facility. So that can be even within a locker room where it's closed off from the rest of the locker room.
In the interest of time, since we have another resolution plus two more new business items,
Yeah. There,
can we move to a vote on the amendment?
Can you call the question on a second?
I call the question on a
question.
Second.
Is there like acclamation for call the question? Okay, so now we will vote on the amendment. All those in favor?
The amendment. Voting in favor, what do you say? Voting in favor, strike that clause.
All those opposed?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Abstention. So it's
1 to 6 to 2.
So, motion passed, or failed. So that be it further resolved, clause is still...
Remains.
I move to postpone further consideration of this amendment of this resolution until the next UA meeting.
Okay. All those in favor? All those opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
So we'll forward this to you tomorrow or the next day so that everybody can, and then we'll get Melissa to take the comments since she's on the resolution or somebody else. We'll let you know to send your red lines to, and then we'll see what we can hammer out in between meetings. The member at large will come to order.
One second, sorry. Next order of new business is Resolution 3 to support proposed changes to retiree and accessible parking. So this is a resolution that we drafted up. As far as the policy changes, there's a short PowerPoint on it with one slide actually specifying what those changes are, so I can pull that up. Okay, so this is the slides of the committee that decided on the changes, and then
this is the slide we're looking at, together?
Yeah.
Can you enlarge it?
Mm-hmm.
Did Kate have any input on this one? No. To my knowledge. I'm only afraid of it. Can you go back one for a second so we see who was on it? She said she should have talked to us, Kate.
How about Shakers?
I don't think they talked to Kate. How about, did somebody go to the Retirees Association?
I think David said he talked to them yesterday.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
I don't think they had.
Maybe that was it.
And I'm also a member of that, and they certainly did not circulate their membership on it.
I'll check the meeting.
So this is the problem. Is this the operative part right here?
Yes.
And this AP placard would be for retirees?
Yeah, I think this is the retirees' plan. This is different.
PowerPoint for?
This is accessible. Okay, so then the retiree part, I'll pull that up in a minute then.
But I'm sorry, if I'm following through this, I want to make sure I understand. They want to issue, instead of perhaps handicap permits, they want an AP permit? Is that what they're, is that what that's saying?
Right, I think they're...
An accessible permit, as opposed to handicap, that'd be interesting.
Right.
I don't see where the retiree is coming
from. No, no, there's another slide on it, sorry. I need to pull that up.
Is someone able to articulate how this is different from the previous?
I think you could pull
should I pull the, yeah.
I think that would be the best.
I know that there was, if I recall, it was something like permits were available for free before, if you were handicapped or whatever, if you needed a access spot. And that there was concern that under the new policy promulgated, there were too many liturgical documents, in the past spring, that would go away. Now people would be, you know, not your fault, you can't walk, and now we're going to charge you for a permit that was free before. So this seems like, I suppose the question boils down to the second bullet on that previous slide. No fee option remains. That, I think, is really the heart of the issue.
So this is just the retiree.
So we have no resolution on the other issue.
We combined the two policy changes together and said that as a committee we support the policy changes.
So this is retiree. You can slide in because it's like 13 the second page.
Mm-hmm. There's one more slide, or one more page.
These are questions
what we used to have. The 25 years of service, that's what we used to have, right? Could request the parking, but so what do we get now? That's what I want to know.
You combine both groups of retirees, creates one set of options, so it doesn't matter how long or not you have 25 years of service or not.
So what are the options? Is it the same as what we have?
Plus retirees with less than 25 years of service.
Yeah, I mean, but do we have the same options that we have?
The stuff that's up there summarizes the current situation.
Right, right. But I want to know what the policy is for retirees now.
This is the policy for retirees now. If you're over 25, you can get a med permit. If you're under 25, you can get an A permit.
Okay, but I got to know what a ZIS permit and what an A permit is.
A Z permit is pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, and an A permit restricts you to the A lot. Z, Z, tomato, tomato. What I would say about this resolution, and I know we're not voting on it today, is that it would be very helpful, I think, to rehash the changes in the resolution text itself. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is the change is being made, whereas it'll have this effect, therefore we support the changes.
Okay.
Yeah. Because as it stands right now, not to belabor the point, but if someone who hadn't seen this PowerPoint and the supporting documents were to read this resolution,
and it mentions the PowerPoint because we're going to have those posted on. I see your point. It's a little too much stress.
I think it'd be better in
the that's
the difference. Okay, so the retiree.
We just made it.
It's set up there. I thought I saw
So I actually have two questions on this. I've heard from a few people about this change.
Yeah.
Regarding two questions in particular, I don't know the answer to, but the first, issues that I know what they know. The first is that, as I understand it, there will now be no more handicap permits given out through Cornell. But
I think that's the idea.
Will apply.
Yeah, instead of having Cornell determine.
Right. And the one of the issues that was brought up to me was that New York State's restrictions on short-term disability permits are, not to be redundant, but much more restrictive than Cornell's were.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be more difficult to get a, if you have a short-term disability, if you have a broken leg or something like that, it's much more difficult to get a permit, is what I heard. And so I don't know if transportation addressed that or what the plans were. And the other question was in paying for permits, if there was a, it was brought up earlier in the slide about whether you have to pay for handicap parking in certain areas. There was a clause earlier about putting equity between paying between disabled and non-disabled drivers, which doesn't seem like that's an appropriate use of the word equity.
I think what the, this is the fourth bullet point there. If you're an important person who, you know, for important reasons, is important, it's importantly parked in front of your hall, you should pay extra for that. Your department should pay extra for that. If the fact that you can't walk or you've broken your leg or you're in a wheelchair limits your ability, your mobility on campus, then you shouldn't have to pay for that. That's basically what I'm reading into that, even though there's, you know, there's not a lot of detail. No fee option, I think, means if you're determined for medical reasons, whether short-term or long-term, to need or other reasons to need.
I can make sure that.
So I know in our area there's several handicap signs that have a specific permit number on it.
Mm-hmm.
How is that affected by this? I'm not sure the rules that govern how Evan got his handicap spot at a specific building, I guess, because he works there and that's where he needs to be handicapped at.
I think it's important when it's a long term, mm-hmm. considered, you know, that's not going to change. This person.
All right, so that won't change under this. It would be an AP permit. But
I think that stuff isn't permits parking. And this is, we're talking about permit parking. Like next to Day Hall, it says reserved for HP 76421, whatever.
Right.
I don't think, like, you can't get a permit that lets you park there. You just are the person who parks there.
There are permits that do have numbers, and the slot is connected with that person for mobility reasons.
Right, yeah.
I mean, yeah, Day Hall's got the president's parking spot, you know. That's fundamentally different from.
No, I mean there's also reserved handicap parking in the lot between Day and Simpson Hall, in addition to any other reserved spots.
So I feel like I would move that we deal with this discussion
and then
come back next meeting with a resolution that has
the transportation committee or the
transportation committee come back with changes to the resolution, which would show what the changes are in
point of order, the infrastructure committee.
Noted.
I second.
Also, point of order, you're making a motion to postpone, not a motion to lay on the table. I'm not the one out of point of order.
I'll second the motion. I apologize.
Yeah, motion.
All right.
Second, now I will.
All those in favor? All those opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes. So now we will move on to the Tech Campus email update.
I was wrong. The proposal does not become public after it's submitted. It remains confidential probably forever, but certainly for as long as it's going to be useful to us. I emailed the provost, and he was willing to divulge to me on behalf of the GPSA, so on and so forth. The executive summary and some preparatory material, which amounts to about 3 pages of material, is confidential. If you were to want access to that, you could yourself email the provost. But it's not going to move things along any further. If you were at that leadership breakfast a few weeks ago, as many of us in this room were, there's nothing new that's in those documents. So the 500-page proposal isn't something that we can have sent to us. That being said, the provost did express his willingness that if particular individuals connected with the UA or the SA or the GPSA have particular things they're interested in, he extended effectively the same offer that he did to the Faculty Senate. You can go into the provost's office, you can look at relevant portions of the document, and so on and so forth. So my apologies for my incorrect impression.
When are you going to sign it,
I think it's by the end of the calendar year, certainly.
It got pushed back to January.
Oh, okay.
But they were hoping to narrow this down to preferred or the finalist of one or two in November. Is that now in December?
This is confidential. This could not be in the minutes.
Well, it's on the recording.
Click the recorder. And second,
it's approved. You want
to sit? Okay, moving on to the next order of new business, campus planning committee.
The UA has an associate committee called the campus planning committee. And the campus planning committee is the committee that, that works through the master plan and gives input on the siting of buildings or where on campus things should be. We also had a University Assembly Sustainability Committee that evaporated. And it evaporated for the President's Sustainable Campus Committee. The President's Sustainable Campus Committee has a number of focus teams. One of the focus teams are the land focus team. So at the Campus Planning Committee, we had a presentation from the President's Sustainable Campus Committee. The President's Sustainable Campus Committee, being a presidential committee, has truly direct access to the President, actually in two ways. And as I think the universe is becoming more centralized, I would say this was an action of centralization. So the University Assembly Sustainability Committee that looked at land use kind of things disappeared. The Campus Planning Committee that also dealt with land use now has to redefine itself whether it's worth anybody's time to remain to talk about building sightings, which is sort of a rubber stamp kind of thing, just making sure that some of the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, eliminate themselves, ourselves, or somehow negotiate with the President's Sustainable Campus Committee for some work to do that makes it worthwhile to me. And that's essentially where we're at.
And the committee doesn't know whether it should dissolve or continue, or
what we got was a presentation from the Hugh Lane, who's the VP of facilities, and Meter Anderson, who's the university planner, and they sort of presented the charge of the committee, which is to provide the president's committee, to provide a forum for interactions between faculty, staff, and students to advance sustainable campus planning and operations related to land and land-based resources, enhance the university's academic mission, support existing efforts and commitments in the sustainable land development, management, conservation areas, including potential collaboration with the greater Ithaca community, sponsor new initiatives that are necessary and timely for land-based sustainability efforts, coordinate specific sustainable land-focused working groups as needed, and collaborate with other folks. Actually, these are many of the things that the campus planning committee had done.
Can I ask the university planning committee, is that the right
term? Campus planning.
Yeah, the campus planning committee. That was that part of ours?
It's an associate committee of ours, not a standing committee.
But where did it come from?
I can clarify status. If It was created by the president of the university. It's one of the, like, the president.
We're talking about the old one.
No, this is a current committee.
It's still an existing committee.
Oh.
So, they're...
The campus planning committee.
Yeah. Yes.
That's been there around for years.
Yes.
Okay, and it was, it, like the university committees...
As I was saying, it's an associated committee of the assembly, which is a status that has existed since the university assembly has existed. And it's a relationship where basically it's chartered by somebody other than the university assembly, but because of shared interest, it has a,
you call it a dotted line relationship. Who is the chair of that?
I believe the president at that point.
I think it's a committee that was appointed by the president and the regulations, by the president and by the dean of the faculty. There was an arrangement where all committees that had to do with general university affairs would go through, the Senate would be consulted on it. I think we had a standing agreement with the president that half the members would be appointed by the Senate. And I think this is one of those committees. And what you're telling me is he's going around the end and is not obeying the rules that, they agreed
to. I'm not aware of any, if that's the case, I mean, President Scorton's only been here for a few years. I've never heard of that arrangement before, so.
We reminded him of it when I was on the USC. I really, in other words, what I'm saying, I don't think you should just fold up and put your tent away. I think we should take this up to the president. Because the campus planning was always part of the property at the Senate, and for all I know, the other parts of the university.
There are facts. It's not. I'm sure. I don't. Since I've been on it, which is a number of years, it hasn't been. At least there hasn't been half the members haven't been faculty.
Sure. How are the members appointed?
The charter is, well, it was included in the University Assembly's charter, the charter of the Campus Planning Committee. So it's kind of complex. There are a lot of people who are, by virtue of their position as a chair of an academic department, you have the chair of National Resources, the chair of the Art Department, chair of Planning Department.
I've got it in front of me. I can read it.
Sure.
There, the composition is two members of each constituency, so that's the four in this room, serve two-year terms spanning consecutive sessions, four members appointed by the president serving staggered three-year terms, and a whole list of people: chair of architecture, chair of natural resources, director of plantations, vice president for facilities, coordinator of landscape architecture, chair of city and regional planning, chair of arts, director of the graduate program in historic preservation, and the university planner serves as an ex officio member without vote. So there are no members appointed by the faculty.
And that's the campus planning
except
committee.
Except in as much as they happen through the
and we believe this is created by the president. Now the president's committed created another committee that seems to be doing similar work. So
that's right. Just like the family services committee kind of that disappeared, the child care subcommittee disappeared.
Well, that's not the same, Randy, because we deliberated it.
The university assembly then said that
you're talking about the university sustainability committee, whose charge is folded into campus infrastructure. Well, that committee, that charge has not disappeared. It's still within one of our committees.
Let's see that.
But campus planning isn't the committee whose charge we get to decide, because it's not our committee. If the president has chartered this committee, he can charge it with whatever he wants. If that charge is tantamount to disbanding the committee, then that's his right, his committee. But our campus infrastructure committee has jurisdiction over sustainability and can make its voice heard on land use and building placement and so on and so forth in exactly the same way the rest of the UA can.
Well, I think you're wrong about my impression of where that committee came from. Although I was going to check it through this. But I don't understand why did the president do that?
I mean, I just want to say one other
question.
is there any indication that the president has proposed anything regarding this committee? Because I know that the university planner expressed some interest in revisiting the charter in light of the campus master plan. She's been tinkering with the charter back committee ever since. So I'm wondering if maybe something else is going on.
No, she sent you that information back in the summer before she was appointed to this presidential committee.
I'm just saying.
So what do we need to do?
I don't know that they're necessarily that far
along. We don't need to do anything right now. The committee itself is going to decide do they have enough of the time.
Okay.
And ultimately, like I say, the university assembly does not have the authority to disband the committee or to change its charge. Or I mean, we can express our feelings, but it's not our committee.
Can I get down the names of these two committees?
I'll give you this.
Okay, thank you so much. And while Howie's doing that,
no, I got it. Okay.
We have two potential meetings left this semester, November 29th, December 6th, with the C&J and other folks coming up. Do we need to have a meeting on the 29th or no? And we may not know today whether you want
to. How about the better thing to do maybe is to have the meeting on the 29th and then at that point
cancel the 6th
if
we don't
have
the 6th. So do we think these issues that, you know, some like resolution, I think those are reason to move forward, and we won't know that tomorrow
what's happening there.
And I'll try and see if we can move the campus administration meeting to 1 week from today, plus 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So we have.
All right, so that means that our next meeting will be November 29th, 2 weeks from now, and we'll determine at that point whether we want to hold a meeting at December 6th. All right, very good.
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor? Opposed? Okay. Abstention? Motion carries.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.